From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fourth day of September 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, hear from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated, and we'll take a look at what's been happening on the state statisticians front in Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota as it relates to crop conditions. Now, here are the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for this Wednesday. September corn down 3.75 today, a settlement price at 3.46. December 3.58.5 for the new crop, 2.5 lower, and the March down 2.5 at 3.71.75. July 3.87.75, a penny and 3/4 lower. September soybeans up 6 cents, 8.62.5 the settlement price. New crop November at 8.75.5 up 7. January 7 higher at 8.89.25, and next year's July at 9.22 up 6.5 cents. The bean oil down 8 cents. Bean meal up $4.20. Soft red winter wheat 9 cents higher in the September at 4.56.25. And live cattle futures finished the October 25 cents lower at $99.02.5. Feeders up $1.40 at $135.55. And the lean hogs on the day. October contract there at $67.12.5. Up 60 cents for the afternoon. Now we're joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie, and thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the support and resistance levels. Have they changed?
Not significantly, but there's a few things that I definitely want to point out. Now, these are from a monthly continuous chart for each of these particular months. In December, corn support at 352, 314 and 288, and resistance 392, 415 and 439, and our down and uptrend lines cross at 370. So that's something that we have to watch close. If we can get a close above that 370 level, that would be a positive move for us. On March, we've got support at 371, then 323 and then 305. Resistance at $4, 4.25. 448. The down and uptrend lines cross at 377 in March corn. So those two numbers are important to us. When we look at beans, November support 854, 810, and 784. Resistance 902, 959, and 1006. Down and uptrend lines cross at 897. And so, you know, we're at 869 right now, so we've got a ways to go. We need a close above that 897. March, support is at 839, 780, 716. Resistance at 914, 953, and 990. And there the down and uptrend lines actually cross at 871. And so, you know, when you look at March beans, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. I'm backwards on that. 871 is on the November, 897 is on the March. And we're at the 869.25 on November, so we're close, and we are currently at 895.75, or we were at 895.75 when I put these numbers together on March. So we're pretty close to both of those crossover lines.
So we're at the end of our marketing year. We finish that up as we head into the month of October, at the end of September here. What do export inspections look like?
Well, wheat's still running. It's running 24% ahead of a year ago, same as it was last week, and the USDA is still forecasting a 4% increase on the year. Corn, 18% behind a year ago, 17 last week is what it was, and USDA is still saying 14%, and that's very possible because, like we've talked before, these are just shipping export numbers for inspections. They do not include the numbers that go across by rail. Soybeans, 20% behind a year ago, same as last week. USDA was saying a 20% decline for the year, so it's right on. Now, it's interesting, in spite of the news that the China government, you know, says they're not going to purchase any more exports from us, our beans are still finding their way to China. Out of the 1.3 million metric tons they inspected this week, 800,000 actually went to China. So, you know, even though all this while they've been saying, and even if these are old purchases, they've been saying, oh, they're not purchasing anything from us. So we know that that isn't necessarily true. So this is kind of good news as far as I'm concerned.
How about the managed money this week?
Well, managed money when it comes to the soft wheat, 20,000 short versus 5,000 long last week. When you look at corn, 107,000 short versus 8,000. You've got beans at 60,000 short. They had been 78,000, so that's improved. Soy meal, 42,000 short compared to 60,000. And we now have soy oil, 1,000 net short versus 1,000 net long. You know, I mean, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Soy oil really is not a big mover and groover as far as I'm concerned. But I think what we have here, Todd, is something that kind of speaks to what's going on in the marketplace. There's not any good news at the moment that feeds the bull. We haven't got, the weather isn't giving us anything to get crazy about. And so therefore, you know, the market is typical in that it goes to wherever it's the easiest to go. And at the moment, it's easier to grind lower than it is to go higher.
You know, in a moment, we'll hear the state statisticians, speaking of looking for something, talk about the condition of the crop across the United States. I thought yesterday's reports might have given them something to discuss in Chicago today.
Oh, there's no question about that. You know, when you look at that crop progress, the USDA came out and said 17.1 million acres of corn are not to the dole stage as of September 1st. And normally that's only about 6.3 million. 3 million acres of beans haven't even started to bloom, and 10.7 million acres have not started setting pods as of September 1st. So that is really, those are significant numbers. I mean, that it just tells you they're not in the business of guessing. They're going to keep giving us the information the way it comes out, and this is starting to back up exactly what we've all been saying, and that is that we're probably not going to have as big a crop as what we see projected at this point in time, but we have to wait for a bit to be able to find that out.
Anything else on the world stage that we ought to discuss today?
Well, you know, I'm sure you've seen it on the news too, the Amazon fires, you know, and all the pictures of the
Sure.
blazing sky and everything else. And, you know, that's concerning. I don't know if you remember, but a while back I talked to you about the Amazon, which provides actually a river up in the sky of water that affects the world. The canopy and the Amazon actually produces about 30 trillion gallons of water per year through respiration. And so I was very concerned, and I started digging deeper. Brazil now said no fires for the next 60 days, and they were extremely critical of Bolsonaro because he didn't send the military in and everything else. Well, Jesse Farrell, who's been a meteorologist for almost 25 years, who currently works for AccuWeather, has a blog. And on his blog, he made some good points. He said, you know, the Amazon region isn't even seeing above-normal fire activity for this year, even though the Global Fire Emissions Database put out information saying that the 2019 fires were the worst in the last 7 years. And so, you know, we're getting real conflicting news. New York Times reporter confirmed majority of the fires were set by farmers preparing Amazon-adjacent farmland for next year's crops and pastures. That's certainly not the way it's been playing out on the television. It's been playing out as if they're burning the trees down everywhere. And even the New York Times, based on their own analysis, confirmed that most of those fires that are burning weren't in the forest, and there were where forests had already been cleared. And so when I looked through Dr. Cordonnier's report, he talked about how the majority of the farmers that did start fires were subsistence farmers, and because setting those fires is totally illegal. But they just say, hey, we're trying to feed our families, you know, and so they went ahead and did it. Now that's why we saw Brazil come in and say no fires now for at least 60 days. But I thought it was interesting. I just had a dig, Todd, because it really bothered me to think that there would be such a big uproar about the Amazon, and yet when Bolsonaro was offered the money, you know, from the G7, he turned it down. He didn't put the military out there. What's going on here? You know, this just doesn't seem to be right. And then when you go through and find out that the majority of them are on land that was already cleared, it certainly makes you wonder about what you're being told. Excuse me. And then the other thing is Argentina. You know, I think they're making an effort to prevent Argentinians from sleeping on U.S. dollars this time with the economy. You know, if you remember the last time, I talked about that quite often, that they slept on more U.S. dollars than anybody else because that was the currency that they could depend on. Well, the government restricted them now from buying on buying U.S. dollars. They're limited in how many they can have. They did that the last time too, and then they did what they called cave buying. In other words, they were sometimes paying as much as 50% over the value to be able to get U.S. dollars versus the Argentinian peso. And you can see why. Consumer prices are up 2.2%. That's 54.4% versus last year. Can you imagine? You know, the peso is down 31% for the year. They're talking to the IMF about a $57 billion loan, you know. And on top of that, they're talking that they may increase taxes again on agricultural commodities. If we remember the last time, that's what they did. Because, you know, unlike here in South America, you know, farmers are looked at like land barons, you know, as if they're rich, rich, rich. And so, you know, it's easiest to take it from them and tax those commodities. So it's not a good situation in Argentina at all.
Hey, thank you for taking the time and digging stuff up for us, as usual. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That is Jackie Vick. She is with Stuart Peterson. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It had some pretty interesting numbers in it nationwide. For corn, 81% of the crop is now in the dough stage. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 93%. Just 41% of the corn crop has dented, and 63% is usually in the dent stage at this time. 6% of the crop has matured, compared to 13% on the rolling five-year average. The condition of the crop is said to be 47% good and 11% excellent. Soybeans blooming at 96% as of September the 1st. That compares to 100% in the usual. And 86% of the crop has set pods. 96% is the five-year average. The condition of the crop, 46% good and 9% excellent. Now, here are the statisticians from Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa with updates from their regions.
This is Brad Medlock, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service Upper Midwest Regional Field Office with the weekly Iowa Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending September 1st, 2019. Iowa farmers had mostly dry field conditions and below normal temperatures during the week ending September 1st, 2019. Statewide, there were 5.8 days suitable for field work. Field work activities included wrapping up fungicide and insecticide applications and harvesting hay. There were a few comments of farmers starting to chop corn silage. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 4% very short, 26% short, 69% adequate, and 1% surplus. Areas in 12 counties within the East Central and Southeast Iowa districts were rated as D1 moderate drought according to the August 29, 2019 U.S. Drought Monitor. 86% of the corn crop was in or beyond the dough stage, 12 days behind last year and 10 days behind the five-year average. 41% of the crop reached the dented stage, 2 weeks behind last year and 9 days behind average. 1% of corn had reached maturity, 11 days behind average. Corn condition rated 62% good to excellent. 90% of the soybean crop has started setting pods, 18 days behind last year and 12 days behind average. 3% of the crop has started coloring, 11 days behind average. Soybean condition rated 60% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Brad Medlock.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. I am reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending Sunday, September 1st. Cool and wet weather continued across Illinois last week. Temperatures ranged from 2 degrees to 5 degrees below normal, and the state averaged 69.7 degrees last week, 3.5 degrees below normal. Rainfall averaged 1.24 inches, nearly 1/2 inch above normal. Southern parts of Illinois had below normal rainfall last week, but the rest of the state was wetter than normal. There was an average of 5 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture levels were reported as 8% very short, 21 short, 66 adequate, and 5% surplus, which is wetter than 1 week ago. Growing degree days accumulated since May 1 are above average in southern parts of Illinois, but are at or below normal in central and northern areas. Corn has reached the dough stage on 82% of acres. That compares to 100% 1 year ago and 97% for the five-year average. Corn in the dense stage reached 46% of acres compared to the five-year average of 76%. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was rated as 19% very poor to poor, 35% fair, and 46% good to excellent, which is a little worse than 1 week ago. The Illinois soybean crop is now blooming on 95% of acres compared to 100% for the five-year average. 84% of acres are setting pods compared to 97% normally. The condition of the Illinois soybean crop was reported as 17% very poor to poor, 37% fair, and 46% good to excellent, a little worse than 1 week ago. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office with a weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending September 1st, 2019. Mostly dry but much cooler than normal temperatures across Minnesota have slowed crop development during the week. There were 5.2 days suitable for field work. Field activities included fall tillage and manure spreading following the conclusion of harvested small grain fields. The start of canola harvest was reported this week, and other reports indicated some issues with aphids in soybean fields. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 1% very short, 13% short, 79% adequate, and 7% surplus. Subsoil moisture supplies were rated 1% very short, 8% short, 82% adequate, and 9% surplus. 84% of the corn crop has reached the dough stage, that's falling to 11 days behind last year and 9 days behind the 5-year average. Corn dented was 25%, nearly 2 weeks behind last year and 10 days behind normal. Corn harvested for silage reached 2% this week. The corn condition was rated 55% good to excellent. 97% of the soybeans were setting pods, nearly 2 weeks behind last year and 6 days behind average. Soybeans turning color reached 7%, that's 10 days behind both last year and average. Soybean condition rated 58% good to excellent, declining slightly from the previous week. Spring wheat harvested reached 65%, that's 9 days behind normal. 88% of the oats had been harvested, that's 3 days behind average, and 92% of the barley crop has been harvested, and that's now 1 day ahead of average. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Midwest. On this Wednesday afternoon, Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, and hope you're having a good day.
You know, it's a gorgeous day here in the Midwest, but not so much if you're near Dorian. Talk a little bit about the destruction that this hurricane has done, and then what you think might be on the plate for the Carolinas and agriculture there.
Well, certainly, I don't have to say too much about the Bahamas that have been certainly devastated by the storm. But, you know, when it comes to the southeastern United States, the folks there have been extremely lucky. The storm has just been far enough off the coast. There's been very little damage to the citrus crop, no damage to the sugar cane. As we go forward through these next 2 days, that might change a little bit, at least as far as row crops is concerned. South and North Carolina both will be impacted by the storm with a lot of wind and rain expected. The latest model data suggests a little wobble in the storm, perhaps, and that might help to spare some of the crops in eastern North Carolina, at least to a certain degree. We're expecting to see enough wind blow inland, though, into corn and cotton production areas that there may be a little lodging done to some of the crops there. Also some flooding rain that might put a few soybeans underwater for a little while. That's not expected to be a widespread serious issue. The storm is going to move fairly swiftly, so even though there's going to be some incredible rain amounts, it'll happen very quickly, and the water should drain out of these fields fairly well. So at this point, a little damage, but most of the impact is going to be on that coast where all the property is. A lot of homes will be impacted by the storm. The Outer Banks will probably be slammed pretty hard, and that's where the greatest amount of damage is expected.
Let's blow westward into the Delta region. We haven't talked a lot about it other than they got started late like everybody else did this year. And then maybe check in on the Midwest, too, for me.
Yeah, the Delta and the Tennessee River Basin both have been benefiting from Dorian's presence by keeping a little mini high-pressure system over that area. It's really drying down quite favorably. That's good for some of the harvest that's underway. Also in the Midwest, we're finding a little bit of a drier tendency here near term. And that has also been helpful in maybe speeding along a little bit of the crop development. We still need a lot of heat units, and that's probably the biggest issue for the Midwest. I don't think we're going to be seeing any dramatic warm-up across the area here in the next couple of weeks. We might actually have a little additional cooling take place towards the latter part of next week, real briefly. So it's all about degree day accumulations and keeping it as warm as possible as we go forward through these next few weeks, obviously, to get this crop as far along as possible before we deal with frost and freezes.
So what do you think the average temperatures or the average highs and the average lows might be, depending on which numbers you have?
Yeah, I think the northern part of the Midwest will probably see 60 and 70 degree temperatures in this first week of the outlook, and then mostly 70s into the second week until late next week. Then we'll probably go back to some 60s again. The lower Midwest, though, probably see temperatures 70s and 80s for the most part. Those 80s will probably be lower 80s most often. Not necessarily all that bad for this time of the year, so we should help to support those crops. Those low temperatures at night should stay mostly 50s and 60s, except in the far north where there will be 40s. So the crop will probably continue to perk along at least at a fair pace.
The further west we go, the more likely we're planting and harvesting at the same time. What do you see in those areas?
Absolutely. You know, the central U.S. plains have had a lot of rain this summer, and the soil conditions out there in parts of Kansas and the Texas Panhandle are really good for winter wheat planting, and some of that is underway. We'll see field work advance fairly quickly. This is the early crop that is usually grazed for a while, and it looks like it should have very good environment to get off to a fair start. The precipitation has backed off on some of these areas, so some of the summer crops are getting an opportunity to dry down a little bit, and we'll start seeing better maturation conditions and eventually a more aggressive harvest environment for those early season crops.
Our next stop probably should be China and then some of the other places across the planet that you've been watching.
Yeah, China, it's had a very interesting summer. It was a bit too dry in that North China Plain during the spring and early weeks of the summer. Then they got some good rainfall during the heart of summer, and now they're going dry again. So some of that region up there is probably going to have a little bit shorter yield than what they would like to see, but it's not been a disastrous year. Unfortunately, for our market prices, there's just an additional reason to keep the prices in the doldrums there. In places like Australia, though, there's still an ongoing very serious drought. Queensland and northern New South Wales have been in a drought for almost 3 years, a serious one at that. It hasn't rained but once, I think, the last few weeks, and there's no rain on the charts for the next 2 weeks. Normally, planting of summer sorghum and cotton begins at the end of this month. And, of course, winter wheat, if it had been planted, normally would be in the midst of reproduction right now. Some of the irrigated crop was planted, but the environment is really not very good for that. The crop is going to be small, even though it's irrigated. Water supply is pretty darn low right now.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.